Oh, we've been waiting for this one for a while. In 2010, Justin Cronin's The Passage was a phenomenon. The Effic spent 3 months on the New York Times bestseller list. It was featured on more than a dozen best of the year lists, including NPR's Year's Most Transporting Books. Stephen King even cheered to a stunned Justin Cronin on Good Morning America. You've put the scare back into vampires, buddy. And now, at long last, we get to enter that world again in The 12, following Amy, Peter, Alicia, and a new cast of characters as they navigate a post-apocalyptic world and hunt the 12 original virals who brought life as we know it to an end. The name of the book is The 12. Justin Cronin is the author, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable once again. Justin, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You know, it was a delight having you on for the first book, and the book just was a phenomenon, and it certainly was. It did incredibly well and was just a hell of a story. So how much did that experience of that book sort of exploding have any impact on part two in the sense of, I don't know, any more pressure in telling the continuing nature of the story?
Well, I'd like to lie and, you know, be the coolest cucumber in the world and say, oh, no, absolutely not, no pressure. But, of course, there was a lot.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden I had all these readers, and they weren't just readers, they were fans. I mean, they were really invested in a story that was continuing. And that was new to me. I mean, all my other books had readers, and when the book ended, they closed the covers, and they had an opinion, and I might have heard about it or I might not have, but now, and thanks also to social media, things like Twitter and Facebook, you hear from your fans all the time.
What was interesting about you, and you were a writer, you would put out literary fiction or whatever that is.
Whatever that is. Explain that adequately.
Not really a phrase I like, but I'll use it anyway. And then you switch gears and you sell this vampire trilogy, and of course the market is right, the timing is right, but what comes out of it is a very well-written, solid book that is just an incredible story. And so for you as a writer, did you feel a fundamental shift, or was it just creating a world that you had always wanted to create?
I wondered about that before I started writing the book. I said, will I be a different writer because I'm writing a story with a lot more plot and a lot more characters than I've ever handled in the past? And what I discovered probably within the first 10 minutes of writing the first book was that you write how you write. And nothing was really going to be different. I was just working on different material. In a sense, I was the same guy. I was just working in a different shop. And that, the challenges that I laid out for myself with this book were not to be a different writer, but to try to be a better writer, to try to handle more material, to teach myself to write, you know, a longer, more complex story than I ever had. And that's just what I set out to do. And as I've said in the past, the book just seemed to want me to write it. You know, it was this sort of invitation from above. Who knows where these things come from? And I just threw my arms around it and said, you know, whatever happens, happens. I'm just going to try to write this novel, and if the world wants it, great, and if the world doesn't want it, great. There's nothing I can do about it.
And when it comes to the process, so you knew very early on that this would most likely be a trilogy.
Oh, from the start. Yeah, from the very start.
That makes it easier, I assume?
Well, pacing? I'm a planner, and I could never write a novel unless I really knew where it was going to go. I mean, I really feel like the end has to be built into the beginning so that the book seems to know itself. And so I needed to know not just the first book, but I needed to know the last book in order to start writing this. I've actually, for 5 years, I've known what the last sentence of the last book would be.
And I just talked to Ken Follett about this, and I've talked to a lot of authors about this, of trilogies, that they will often say, looking back, that the second book is always the hardest, because you have to maintain what you started in the first. You have to obviously propel the action to get ready for the third, but in the same token, something big has to happen and still carry readers through. Did you find that a challenge at all?
Yeah, the middle book trap, I call it, and it was something I was aware of from the start, because what I realized was that the middle book in a lot of trilogies it sort of just borrows all of its momentum from the book before it, and it's just trying to get you to the book after it. It's basically a long second act bridge between one and three. And it can be a very fine book, but it doesn't have some of the, you know, it doesn't have the sort of explosive quality of book one, and it doesn't have the conclusive feel of book three. So what I decided to do is I would deliberately write the second story with some fresh information in the front. Each of the novels will go back to the year zero to show you something that you did not see the first time or saw only from the corner of your eye that then plays out 100 years later to sort of change the terms of the main narrative, which is, as you said, Amy, Peter, Alicia, Michael, these characters who are embarked on the project of, you know, saving the world, ridding it of the great viral menace.
When you look at that viral menace, and because, as I said, the market was right, and we were kind of culturally in this vampire-like mode, but your vampires don't sparkle, and there isn't this weird story. And if we compare it to anything else, your book, the first book, was compared to Cormac McCarthy's The Road and Stephen King's The Stand, for goodness sakes.
Those are the two that I heard the most, yeah.
And I think, and I certainly agree with The Road, but although even The Stand and The Scope, were you at all worried about that genre at all of having it put a label on the book that was perhaps on the outside, perhaps being discussed in the marketing, but was far from what was between the covers?
Well, you know, genre is sort of a marketing tool. It tells you more about where a book's going to be shelved and how it's going to be written.
Right.
And when I started writing the Passage trilogy, started writing the first book, and as I was writing the first book and the second book, I was always thinking in terms of the many different kinds of genres that I was working in. I mean, I feel like the Passage is, among other things, for instance, a Western. I have this community of people who've been raised in isolation, who've lived in isolation for 100 years in Southern California, who suddenly need to take a journey across the American West and experience it in all its immensity and power for the first time, rather like the first European settlers coming to the American West. The Western is a great and particularly American literary tradition. And the 12 has operating in the background, a novel that's very important for me, which was 1984, which I read in college and wrote my college thesis about. So I was always thinking of these books in terms of multiple genres, all of which I wanted to pay, I wanted to acknowledge my debt to. So I didn't worry about it very much. I really just kind of had a good time with it. I think, you know, it's a good thing to acknowledge the your elders. And I really do it everywhere in the pages of these books.
There's so much about the parent-child relationship. I know we talked about this the last time regarding the first book, which certainly continues in this book. And that's
hello?
Very... Hello.
Oh, yeah, I feel like I've lost the signal. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Okay, sorry. I couldn't. Maybe I just couldn't hear your last question.
I was saying that we talked about this during when you were on about the first book, but that book, The Passage, and this book, The 12, both have this very strong parent-child relationship core to them, and that was something important to you in the first book and something that remains central throughout this trilogy.
I'm a parent, and, you know, it's what I am 24/7, and it's really the place that I write from. I always say that I never would have been a novelist, or at least a very, you know, a good novelist, if I hadn't had kids, which, you know, having a parent teaches you empathy. You know, you spend so much of your time just trying to imagine experience from another person's point of view. And, of course, The Passage was conceived in some ways within the chemistry between a father and a daughter. It was my daughter and I spending time together and her dare for me to write these books that brought them about. And so at the center of these books, just as in the just like the center of my life, you have parent-child relationships, that bond, which is really our most important and ultimately our most cohesive bond as a community and as a civilization. And we break it at our peril. We break it, and if there's something savable about us, if there's something that's going to save us, it is that commitment and that bond.
Justin Cronin is the New York Times bestselling author of The Passage. His new book is The 12. It's the second in the trilogy. It is a great pleasure to have you on the program, Justin. Thank you very much. Best of luck. And we look forward to having you come around for the third.
Good. We'll chat in 2 years. Thanks for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is The 12. It is published by Ballantine. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.